Well, she...
or she has to stop, like, discharging and then start praying.
You're right. You know, if she knows she is discharging blood, first of all, she has to remove the pad,
mm-hmm.
wash herself, and, of course, change the pad, okay, or whatever, which is stained with blood, because she cannot pray with the blood coming or with the blood on the pad she is wearing. So she has to change or renew the pad, and then continue continue with her prayer. So the answer to your question is that she should do whatever she can to prevent the flow of the blood.
Mm-hmm. I see. You also talked about the you know, the rule or the law for the little istihadha.
Yeah.
But what about the other forms of istihadha?
Good.
All right. We have only 1 minute.
We have, of course, we have covered little istihadha, but as far as medium istihadha is concerned, of course, a woman has to perform one ghusl for the medium istihadha, okay? One ghusl. Now, if
for each unit of prayer?
No. For the whole 24 hours, okay?
I see.
If she wakes up in the morning and finds herself in the state of medium istihadha, she has to perform ghusl for the fajr prayer, and that ghusl is sufficient. But then she has to make one wudu for every prayer. Okay, she has to make wudu, and wudu is necessary. Wudu is a part of the obligation. One ghusl is enough, but then she has to make wudu for every single prayer.
And it's not like the janaba ghusl, which
it's
is
not. Of course, when you are in this state,
yes.
This is a very important point. Maybe we will discuss it further in the following episode.
Yes, inshallah.
But then, if a woman happens to be in the month of Ramadan and she wakes up, and to her surprise, she sees, for example, some kind of blood on the pad she's wearing. She is not supposed to break her fast, because she must observe fast, and ghusl is not obligatory for the fast. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Because her fast remains valid.
It has nothing to do with fasting.
Yeah.
Only what we are talking about is related to prayer.
To prayer.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Please stay tuned. You might have heard the story of Luqman and his son while they were riding their horse. At first, they were both on the back of the horse. Someone saw this scene and said, "How cruel you two are to sit on the back of the horse at the same time." Then Luqman and his son dismounted the horse. Someone else saw the scene and said, "How crazy you are not to mount on the horse and walk on your feet."
Luqman savar shod, pesare piyade amad. Yeki did gof,
ajab. Then Luqman mounted on the horse and the son walked behind on his feet. A person saw them and accused Luqman of being cruel and not to let his young, weak son on the back of the horse. Upon hearing this, Luqman dismounted the horse and let the son mount on it. Another person saw this scene and told the son, "What an impolite son you are. How can you sit on the back of the horse while your old father is on his feet walking?" Then Luqman told his son, "As you could see, there were only four options for riding the horse, and in all four cases, we were accused of doing something wrong. Thus, anything you do, you might not be safe from the harms of the tongue of the people." Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
تبارك الذي نزل الفرقان على عبده ليكون للعالمين نذيرا
Blessed is he who sent down the criterion upon his servant that he may be to the world a warner.
Dear listeners, before we start talking about the first verse of this chapter, we'd better say that this surah is the 25th chapter, and it contains 77 verses, and it has been sent down in Mecca. In the first verses of this surah, the Quran has rendered it into Furqan, which means the separator of the right from wrong, and that is why this surah has been called Furqan. This surah consists of some verses about the pretexts of the pagans and, of course, the answers to them. This surah also talks about the lives of the former people, such as the people of Ras and the people's regret in hereafter, the signs of unity, the greatness of Almighty Allah in nature, and the comparison of the believers with unbelievers. But it seems that the most important part of the verses of this holy surah is about the qualities of Ibadur Rahman, or those true servants of Allah, which begins from the 63rd verse to the end of the surah. We hope that by reciting these verses and by truly contemplating on them, we will see improvement in our behaviors and our manners based on these qualities, and we can pave the way of receiving the divine grace and favors in the world and hereafter, and finally we enter paradise. There is a tradition quoted from Ishaq bin Ammar from Hadrat Abul Hasan Musa bin Ja'far alayhi salam, who told him, "Do not abandon reading and reciting surah, this Surah Al-Furqan, since if any believer reads it every night, he will not punish him at all, and he will not reckon him, and his abode will be in the exalted Firdaus." This has been narrated in Thawab al-A'mal by Saduq.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So let's just get started. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. The first verse states, تبارك الذي نزل الفرقان على عبده ليكون للعالمين نذيرا. Blessed is he who sent down the Furqan, the distinction of right and wrong, upon his servant, that he may be a warner to the world. This sentence introduces the Prophet Muhammad as the warner to the whole world. At first it starts saying, Tabaraka. This Quranic word is probable to have been derived from Baraka, which means abundant goodness. It is also possible that it is derived from the word in the sense of stable or fixed. So it implies that he who descended the Holy Quran is the source of many blessings, and one of his blessings, as an example, is this very descending of the Quran. And what blessing is more important than the divine law that has led billions of people from darkness to the light of guidance in the course of history? تبارك الذي نزل الفرقان. Blessed is he who sent down the Quran. If it is in the form of the word نزل, it means to send down gradually, and if it is in the form of the word أنزل, it means that sending down has happened immediately and at once. Of course, the Holy Quran has enjoyed both kinds of descending. One time is in the night of determination or honor, in which Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad at one instance, about which the Holy Quran says, "Inna anzallahu fi laylatil qadr." Surely we sent it down on the night of honor. And other time is done gradually during 23 years. Brothers and sisters, there are many points to be discussed regarding this first verse of the chapter, specifically about the true meaning of Furqan in this verse, and we will, God willing, talk about them in the next program. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. And we are discussing various sermons that inspire us as to understand what this charter is. And one of those sermons is the sermon, is the third sermon called Khutbatu Sheikh Shaqiyya, a very famous sermon, inshallah, which I shall explain slightly its words and we'll try to understand its meanings. But most importantly is the topic, I mean the you can say the ruh or the soul of what Imam Ali alayhi salam wants to say in this sermon, is that he wants to introduce the direction or the aim of the governance of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. What is the aim? What is the purpose? What is the direction that the governance of Imam Ali alayhi salam or the governance of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam want to take? What is the path that they want to go towards or they want to traverse in so as to reach that destination? So we will discuss certain introductory sessions for one or two sessions maybe up to three sessions, and then we shall enter into explaining parts of the sermon, inshallah.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, when we talk about this sermon that we are mentioning, the sermon of Sheikh Shaqiyya, we say that in this sermon, Imam Ali alayhi salam wants to tell us the direction of the Islamic governance or the governance of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. What is that specific thing that separates the governance of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam from other issues from other governments, from other forms of government or other forms of governance. So we know that there are various people who struggled, who worked hard throughout history. They did all they can to bring about this Islamic governance, this governance of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. They did so much. They spilt their blood. They shed their sweats. They they worked and struggled, formed systems, formed a kind of awareness amongst the people. But for what? What was their aim? Their aim was something special. And that is what separates them from others. Now, that thing, that slogan that the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, that the governance of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam had, and that actually gave that direction, that formed that movement in a certain path, is, what is it? We want to know what that is. What is that movement? What is that direction? Because we have heard about the fact that there is a movement that Imam Ali and his followers wanted to follow. They wanted to create that movement, to follow in that path, to achieve something. And what was that? If we see what Imam Ali did, that he continued to follow that path that he had till the end of his life, what was that that he was so steadfast about? What was that that made him different from others? What was that specific issue within his system of governance that was causing him to be different, causing his governance to be different from the governance of other individuals and other people? This is a very deep question that needs to be answered and to be understood.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, we see that Imam Ali alayhi salam and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam proposed a certain way of governance. And because of the system that they were proposing, they faced challenges, they faced difficulties, they faced intolerance by the governments of that time. And there was a kind of, you can say, opposition. There was a contradiction between them. You can say an opposition that existed between them. What was that? What was the reason behind that opposition? Was it just because of different people? Was it because there were different people? Let's say Imam Ali was a person with a certain view, and the people, the other people who are claiming to be rulers, they were something else. And just because of the personalities, we say that there was a difference in their personalities as people, and therefore that was the reason why there was a difference, and there was a fight, or there was a kind of a conflict that existed between them. No, it was not that. The reason for conflict was not the people. Rather, the reason for that conflict was the direction and the aims and objectives that the leaders, the so-called, you can say, people who thought they are the ones to lead the Muslim society, the type of thinking and the type of aims and objectives they had were completely different from the aims and objectives that Imam Ali alayhi salam had in mind and what he wanted to bring about in the society. So the conflict, the fight, you can say, was not existing between personalities. Personalities were not important for Imam Ali. It was not about him as a person, or that person, or the other person, as an individual. No. The actual issue was the aims and objectives that those other individuals had in mind. It was the direction that they wanted to take Islam towards and the Muslim towards. In this sense, there was no difference between the Muawiyah, let's say, who was a Bani Umayyah, and let's say Mansur, who was Abbasi, there was no difference between the two because both of these had the same direction. Yes, they were different people, but they shared the same reality in terms of their thinking, their soul, rather their you can say their aims and objectives were the same. And therefore, Ahlul Bayt, Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, came with another form of governance because of the type of direction that they wanted to follow. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He helps us understand this issue of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
A Leak in Paradise, Part 2.
Golf is important for bankers. It's a good place to talk to clients because no one is going to listen to you on the golf course. The high net worth individuals, you wouldn't meet them in the office. I worked in 8 secrecy jurisdictions: Cayman Islands, BVIs, Bermuda, Guernsey, Jersey, Isle of Man, Mauritius. All of them had golf courses.
Elmer's a very conservative man. He comes from a very, very poor working class background, and he's made it into the heart of the Swiss establishment, into the financial sector. And he is, or was for years, extremely loyal to the financial sector, unusually loyal, because he has made it out of nowhere to be a somebody. And therefore, I think it was a real shock to him when the system started to let him down, when it behaved badly. And then when he complained about that bad behavior, when it ejected him. So I think he was completely unprepared to play this role of whistleblower. And it's taken him literally years to work out how to do it. And it's really only recently that he's understood how to do it by coming out publicly and trying to build alliances who can help him to get the truth out.
Bank Julius Baer hired lawyers in LA. And the lawyers in LA represent the Hollywood stars. They're very, very aggressive at trying to basically use abusive process to shut down publications. Their tactic was to spray out subpoenas, spray out legal demands, and move extremely quickly. So they had a court case without even us turning up, and a temporary restraining order was issued, which knocked off the WikiLeaks domain name for about 10 days.
As a grand finale, Elmer leaked the files of two big fish. The candidate for the presidency of Brazil in 2002, Rosana Sani, appeared as a beneficiary of the Coronado Trust based in Guernsey. She was forced to step down from the presidential race after police raided her company and found unexplained cash.
Rudy's business hasn't started up so well, and he's still struggling with it. So this is why I'm here, to earn some money for the family. I live with my mother-in-law, and we share a flat, basically. My social life is very limited. I work long hours, and I go back home late. I'm keeping my costs low and trying not to spend extraordinary amounts of money. What I earn here, about half of it goes back to Mauritius to support Rudy there. At the moment, I'm trying to find a flat for us to bring him back here. I'm now trying to solve a problem, basically, and keeping the family together in any way I can. It's not that I chose to do this. I'm just kind of putting back together a broken glass.
1 hour after this interview, the UK tax authorities were given a CD full of offshore banking data from the Standard Bank. Rudolf Elmer never knew if the data was used by tax authorities. Tax secrecy is just as untransparent as the sacrosanct banking secrecy.
There are very powerful organizations, by which I mean the majority of Swiss banks and British banks, that need to reassure their clients, that is, tax evading clients and criminal clients from across the world, that their personal affairs are absolutely secure and hidden behind banking secrecy legislation, not just banking secrecy legislation, but secrecy arrangements of tax havens in the Caribbean, which use trusts and offshore companies.
During my investigation, I was contacted by a friend of Rudolf Elmer. He knows the Swiss banking community and Elmer's personal story very well.
David, if please keep my name to yourself. I'm just trying to help you understand the system. Most of the people who are actually trying to bring down the system don't want any publicity. They don't want to be public heroes. You know, most people have a very soft image of Switzerland. But the Swiss bankers can actually destroy people like Rudy to calm down others. That's why they went so bad against Rudy, because they don't want other Rudys. In the view of other employees of the Swiss banks, becoming a Rudy doesn't pay.
Flashback. After his dismissal from Julius Baer in the Cayman Islands in 2003, Elmer returned to Zurich, where he found a new job. With documents in his possession that were incriminating to the bank, he posed a threat to Julius Baer, and the bank hired up to 10 private detectives to watch him.
That's the house we were living in. I drove in this road with huge speed between 9 and 10 o'clock in the evening, and then they stopped the car abruptly here in front of the room where my little girl was. They drove in with a quite bit of speed to create that terrible noise, and then they drove back again. So, and that happened not only once, it didn't happen twice, it happened several times, and I can recall, I would say at least about 10, 12 times, there were times when it happened three evenings in fall, or for them 2 days nothing at all, and so on. So we didn't really know what we have to expect. Stalking is, from my point of view, a crime, especially if you go after family members, after children, after neighbors. I mean, it's not one neighbor, it's another one, it's another way, down there, everyone. So it's a huge number of people who felt afraid. They drove me mad, yeah. I was mad, to be honest. I was mad at certain points in time. Luckily, I wasn't that mad that to take any terrible action and, let's say, using a gun or anything else. I just thought, if I can stop them, here you are, calling the police. Because every time when it happened, the police was, unfortunately, too late. I prepared a piece of wood, put nails in it, put that on the street, lying on the meadow there, and waiting until those guys come and pull the piece of wood over the road to hurt their car, car. And then that was interesting, I mean, it was interesting that my daughter came and said to me, Papa, mm-hmm. what are you doing here? And then I said, okay,
I lost myself again. I'm driven by action, not by logic. Today I know how to drive people mad.
Yes.
If you do have the money and put constantly a little bit more pressure here, a little bit more pressure there, on the employees in your office, then on your family, your daughter, then I was closed. I mean, I was thinking about suicide. I was thinking about taking action against those stalkers, or taking an action against key people in the bank, because I knew Raymond Baer was behind it. He knew what was going on. I knew Mike Baer was behind it. I knew Thomas Baer. Those were the guys who could have said, we stop that action. But they must have said, go on. Go on with the action. Make this guy, as I said, as the head of resources told me, finish him up.
This intimidation by private detectives took place in 2004 and 2005. At that time, Rudolf Elmer and his family repeatedly filed complaints against X for harassment, but the Zurich prosecutor systematically refused to open an investigation. Rudolf Elmer then responded using the means available to him by sending his data to the Swiss tax authorities and a financial magazine.
The journalist just chose to do nothing. I mean, he didn't investigate the data. He just broke the story that the data were stolen, and that's it. Only 4 years later, when a similar CD was handed over to The Guardian, they investigated the data. They wrote about the clients, about high net worth individuals, about tax avoidance, about money laundering. All the things that 2005 weren't done.
A few weeks later, the media group Ragier, which owns Cash, covertly handed a copy of the CD to the bank.
Why did they give the CD to the bank in the first place? I mean, what about the protection of the sources? That's exactly the argument they used, not to hand over the CD to the prosecutor. So either you protect your sources from the bank and from the prosecutors, or you don't protect your sources, and then you have to hand over the CDs to everybody.
When the Cash story broke, Julius Baer filed a complaint against X for breach of banking secrecy. Quickly, things are closing in towards Elmer.
Basically, what happened is I went to work, was called by a policeman, and he told me that something is wrong with my daughter, I should come home quickly. I left the office at 9 in the morning again, back to Freienbach, and then there was the police in my house. They just said they're performing a house search, and they take me now to custody.
After 2 weeks in custody, Rudolf Elmer's lawyer called for his release. The Zurich justice system then produced a document of a dubious nature.
Hello. My name is David Leloup. I am a Belgian journalist, and I am preparing a story about Rudolf Elmer. Do you know Rudolf Elmer?
No.
The prosecutor used your name.
My name is Laurent.
Yes. To testify against him. You don't know him. Because
no.
Here it's written that you are his wife.
No. I don't know. I don't understand it.
It's
my
name, yes,
my name, yeah.
You are not the wife of
No.
This false evidence against Rudolf Elmer was apparently due to a copy-paste error by the Zurich Department of Justice. It was nevertheless used, along with other arguments, to keep Elmer in custody for another 2 weeks.
After the imprisonment, I had two meetings with the bank, and a representative of the bank made an offer to settle the problem, and it was a payment of around 500,000 Swiss over 5 years, every month a little portion, an installment, and then at the end some lump sum. But basically it meant over 5 years, and
The idea was just that I stayed quieter for those 5 years. Now, what they wanted from me was that I do accept that agreement, and all the complaints they had against me would be solved.
But Rudolf Elmer saw this offer as a means of buying his silence. So he turned it down and went into exile in Mauritius.
Crisis will identify jurisdictions that fail to cooperate, including tax havens, and take action to defend our financial system.
We have agreed that there will be an end to tax havens that do not transfer information on request. The banking secrecy of the past must come to an end.
Hello, here is Mr. Berger. I would like to have some advice on a trust issue. I'm Swiss American and need some advice how to set up the structure or move the structure.
Yeah, sure. If you want to give me a better idea of what you're looking for, I can give you some better advice.
Yeah, I do have a Cayman Trust who holds a Swiss account, has a Swiss bank account. I'm a bit afraid of to keep the money in Switzerland. Are there options?
Well, the country that does not cooperate with either Switzerland or the United States, they're very difficult to get any information out of, is Guatemala. They don't share any information based on any tax cases, even if it's criminal.
All right.
Guatemala is very secure.
But in Guatemala, are there banks like well-known banks like HSBC or call it Credit Suisse or Deutsche Bank?
Yes, there are. There's one bank in particular. I can't give out the name of the bank until you're a paid client, but it's on the same level as HSBC or Credit Suisse. What we need for the bank account would be a notarized copy of your passport.
And would it be possible to have kind of a hold mail agreement with the bank? That, I mean, I don't really want that the information is sent out to, let's say, over the bound to another country.
Yeah, no. You're protected by bank privacy laws of Guatemala. It would be illegal for the bank to release any information on you.
All right.
You have all ownership of the company, but the lawyer will appear for you in the public registry.
That's called kind of a nominee, huh, isn't he? Then
that's right.
Yeah. All right. That sounds good. Yeah. And how much would it cost such a structure?
We charge $4,000 for the company and the bank account in Guatemala.
That's all in all. Yeah.
All in all.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's very reasonable.
The offshore banking system emerged from the financial crisis stronger than ever. Once again, Rudolf Elmer looked for a way to rock the system.
Mr. Rudy Elmer, please welcome him to discuss his story, his case, and the issues it raises. Thank you.
Come on in. I would like to tell you the short story first about what happened to me, and then the second part will be then about the real matter. Now, the short story is, and it's a very simple one, I was in the Cayman Islands, and there was a kind of a mouse tail. I started to pull on it a bit. And it got bigger, the tail. It looked like a dragon tail. I went back to Switzerland. I started to pull on it more. I didn't stop. And it got bigger and bigger. It became a dragon. A dragon, a fire-breathing dragon with several heads. And one of the heads was the bank. One was the press, one the Swiss press up to a certain extent. Then the prosecutor. And all were after me and my family to put pressure on us.
Basically, in 2008, having exhausted the routes he sought through the bank and the Swiss courts, Mr. Elmer went to WikiLeaks, Julian Assange. Thank you for coming.
Mr. Elmer has been fighting his case for some 5 years, I believe, to, in one way or another, draw attention to this data. Of course, we don't know whether he is our source or not. We are structured in such a way that we do not know that. However, he certainly has something important and has had something very important to say about this matter. And I understand he is in a position to have more to say and more to give to the world to help them understand the sort of corrupt practices.
This data has been collected due to my whistleblower website, having had contacts with other people. I will not reveal any company names. I will not reveal any high net worth individuals. What I want to do is to hand this over to WikiLeaks, and I say that again, WikiLeaks, in order to have it investigated and making a decision on it. It's a similar thing as the first whistleblower letter I wrote.
And together to the front, guys.
I can't say more than that.
The Guardian did mention 40, as many as 40 politicians were possibly involved in this. Can you state that possibly we're talking about 40 politicians?
I made that statement, so I can state it, yes.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio This is your host Musa Al-Bahalili and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing In this program we discuss problems, issues and other relevant questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children As usual all of the answers provided in this program are based upon the holy book of the Quran and upon the narrations of the Prophet and of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all. Joining us in the studio is our dear friend and guest speaker, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi,
who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qom. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Today, we will be continuing our discussion on how to identify the obstacles we face when we are raising our children and how to get over them. Dear Sayyid, what other obstacles will we face when we want to raise our children, and how do we solve these obstacles?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajhum. One of the things that we do is that when we deal with our children, sometimes a term that I like to use, like, we gang up on them, right? gangster style.
Right.
What happens with a lot of parents, for sometimes they collect too much enemies on their kids. So, for example, the father or the mother, they go complaining to the teacher about their son. My son is this, and he's at home. Could you please talk to him, this and that, right? They go to their relatives and like, okay, he done this and that. He goes right. to, they go to this. So they're constantly finding people to join the club.
The gang.
The gang. Right. On their child.
The bullying gang.
Yeah. So the right. child automatically, when he constantly hears his parents talking about him in front of his teacher, in front of his parents, what happens is it creates a sense of hate towards those people
right.
and the professions that they have.
And a sense of betrayal.
Yeah. So, for example, if I go to his teacher and I'm constantly complaining to his teacher, and the teacher, you know, is like, okay, your parents saying this and that, I'm going to hate the teacher. I'm going to hate school altogether.
Right.
Now, it's bad enough I have my parents to worry about at home.
Right.
Now, I have to worry about them coming to my school and treating me in this manner.
Yeah,
and
right.
same thing with your relatives. Sometimes if your mom and your dad go about talking about you in front of your relatives, you'd right. like, you don't want to visit them again anymore.
You also think it's a breach of your privacy.
Yeah, so you don't want to do that anymore. So parents need to understand that with such things, it causes the children a lot of problems.
Right.
Okay? Now, yes, there needs to be a source of communication between the school and the parents.
Obviously.
You know, yeah. If, right. if, for example, if the parent, for example, he needs to get his son to do something, or at least get his teacher to talk to him, there has to be, you know, a system, an organization. Right. It has to be, like, done in a very proper, professional manner.
It must be a cooperative effort.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I come to the teacher and say, look, we're having this issue with the child. I had many parents come and tell me this. Look, because some of the kids that I used to teach, their parents would come to me and say, okay, my child has this and this is his problem.
Right.
Now, I could go back to the child and say, why are you doing this?
Right.
Why is your mom and dad saying this about you? You know, this is not nice.
Of course.
Oh,
yeah.
I could say no. Like, in a natural manner, I talk about the topic, I right. hint to it, without making them feel that this is what their parents right. told
you. You keep it in your mind.
Yeah.
At least.
Right. And sometimes I find, like, kids are like, oh, this is exactly what my dad you always say.
Right. Yeah.
So they...
You do know, it subtly.
Exactly. So you right. have to do it in a way where you don't make sure the child... that you are bringing too much people against them.
Right. Dear Sayyid, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are continuing our discussion on how to face and solve the obstacles we may face when we are raising our children. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
Another obstacle that we face with our kids is that we bring ourselves to the child's level sometimes, and we become opposites, okay? So, for example, the son screams,